You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
That's right. Earlier today, I spoke with Professor Stephen Hoadley of the University of Auckland. We spoke about Donald Trump's decision to move the US Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv, where it sits currently, to Jerusalem, and the fallout this is going to have. I started off by asking if he could explain the importance of Jerusalem to the regional conflicts.
Jerusalem is the site of the three great religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. In fact, the Muslims believe that the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem is the third most holy site behind Mecca and Medina. And consequently, whatever happens in Jerusalem is of great interest not only to the Palestinians, who hope to put their capital there in a separate Palestinian state, whenever that may happen, but also to Muslims around the world, perhaps even in New Zealand, that regard the U.S. move and the Israeli management of the whole city of Jerusalem as an offense to their religion.
So the way that Jerusalem is currently divided is one of the biggest issues here. Could you give us an understanding of East Jerusalem and the controversy over that in particular?
Yes, in the 1967 war, Jordan temporarily occupied the East Jerusalem and what we now call the West Bank or the occupied territories or the disputed territories, and the words that you choose will indicate where you sit on the debate. When the 67 war took place, the Israelis then displaced the Jordanians and they then moved into East Jerusalem and recently have annexed it as well. So the Israelis believe that Jerusalem is a unified city. There is no necessary division between Jerusalem and the Old City and East Jerusalem. And consequently, as Naftali Bennett, for example, a pretty hardline spokesperson for Israel, said on CNN yesterday, there's really no debate from the Israeli point of view. Now, from the Palestinian point of view, of course, there's a huge debate. And the Oslo Peace Accords a decade ago indicated that the status of East Jerusalem should be negotiated. It is not a closed question at all, but rather an open question. And I think what Donald Trump has done, he seems to have closed the door on those negotiations by, in a sense, legitimizing Israel's declaration that Jerusalem is one city and that the Palestinians have no necessary claim to East Jerusalem or other parts of Jerusalem as well.
So the BBC and other major news institutions are reporting this as a reversal of decades-long US policy. Is this in the sense that until now the US has wanted to leave the negotiating door open, in a sense, and as you're saying, this has shut the door in some regards?
Yeah, you're quite right, Connor. This is a change of U.S. policy. There are a lot of issues in international politics that are best left unspecified. The status of Taiwan is one of them. That is, as long as nobody forces the issue, Taiwan and China can coexist. Now, in the Palestinians' claim to East Jerusalem is alive. The United States probably recognized that there was a claim, even though they didn't agree with it. But by leaving the embassy in Tel Aviv, they avoided confronting the issue or forcing the issue to a confrontation. Well, by moving the embassy, this is a very visible symbol by President Trump that the United States is taking sides with Israel. It does confront, it does inflame, it does create all the unnecessary possible violence that many, many governments have warned Trump against. It's an affront to Saudi Arabia, that's United States' number one partner besides Israel in the Middle East, which is a leader of the Sunni religion and recognizes the Al-Aqsa Mosque as important as a symbol. And It flies in the face of, well, the Financial Times, for example, in Great Britain, has a scathing editorial about the decision by Trump has caused trouble not only for the Middle East, but also for Trump himself. That is, he will be the loser by unnecessarily confronting world opinion. He may gain slightly in his base, that is, the Midwestern, more conservative, religiously oriented people that have voted for him. But he will have lost a lot of credibility around the world by what the Financial Times says, is quite an unnecessary act.
Is there a strategic gain to be made by potentially destabilizing the region? Although, from my opinion, it seems like it would be an unwanted step by the US forces. As you're saying, it goes against the Saudi policy, which is the number one ally, but it does help Israel, who is their second biggest ally in the region. Would that be part of the thinking?
Well, I don't see how that would work, because Israel and the United States already have a very close working relationship. No formal treaty, but in everything but a treaty, just like New Zealand and the United States has no formal treaty, but a very close practical working relationship in defense technology, in strategy, in counterterrorism, in intelligence exchanges, and so forth. There was absolutely no reason why the United States had to make this move. Even if Israel wanted the United States to make it, they would continue to work with the United States, even if the U.S. didn't make it. It is interpreted by most, but this is very much a political gesture by Donald Trump, that he probably has overridden the advice of his more sober cabinet ministers, his Secretary of State, National Security Advisor. All these are generals, and their generals, paradoxically, are the most cautious people when it comes to armed conflict. So he's overridden their advice as well, and he is playing a political card to his base of supporters in the United States. Well, this is very unfortunate when statesmanship gives way to party and personality politics.
So the media in the Middle East is reporting very different stories depending on which side of Israel you're sitting with. The Israeli media is reporting it as the recognition of the truth. That's something that they've known for 3,000 years, whereas Palestinian media is reporting it as, in the words of Hamas, the kiss of death on the two-state solution. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's certainly true that Jerusalem is the center of the Judaic culture, religion, and now state. So that is a fact, but that fact can be treated more gently, more diplomatically, in light of the huge tensions. Now, does this, in fact, scuttle the two-state solution? Well, again, observers differ on this. Some who say that a two-state solution is now impossible because Israel monopolizes the potential capital, the second state. It indicates that the United States is not an unbiased broker of the peace process that Trump does aspire to be, but he has now shot himself in the foot diplomatically, because nobody will regard the United States as an unbiased, honest broker in the process. And the extreme case, illustrated by Naftali Bennett's statements on CNN, are that if Israel continues to dominate the West Bank, Israel will be one state, but Jews will be a minority in that state. And that, as Sarah Saeb Erekat, the Palestinian leader, has said, then Israel will be explicitly an apartheid state. That is, there'll be Jews on the one side, and Israeli Arabs, who have every privilege as well, will be a privileged population, and then the Palestinian majority, both in the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip, will be a depressed minority. And this, in a modern democratic state, is unacceptable. That is, Israel's claim to moral superiority and to observation of international law and democratic norms will be severely undermined. This is one of the consequences of this, and the two-state solution certainly looks more distant than ever before.
The idea that Israel is monopolizing much of the assets available for power in the region, specifically the capital, but also they do have a much greater control over financial capital and technology. Who does Palestine go to voice their opinion? I mean, they're talking about, so Hamas has called for an uprising. Obviously, there is a large population of Palestinians who do not want conflict. How do these people get their voice heard? Because the Security Council will be meeting later in the week. Obviously, a Security Council vote is relatively ineffective without US consent. What other options are left for Palestinians?
Well, very good point, Connor. The General Assembly is the place where the Palestinians have gotten the most sympathy. The General Assembly has voted to make the Palestinian Authority a an observer a state, and now they have a sort of in-between status from just an observer. They're not a full member of the General Assembly, but they do have now this label state beside their name, which is a step forward from their point of view. World public opinion is another. We'll find a lot of journalists will side very openly with the Palestinians. There's a large Palestinian support movement in Australia. There's a small one in New Zealand. Around the world, we'll find that they will find through social media, as well as Orthodox media, a sympathetic reading and a condemnation of Israel and now the United States for taking this precipitate action. So the Palestinians are not without sympathy. They're not without ways to exercise what a doctoral student of mine is calling public diplomacy, that using the media, using support groups around the world, sympathetic journalists, sympathetic governments, to express their point of view. So there's certainly no shortage of information for anybody who is sympathetic and wants to look into it as to exactly what the Palestinian grievances are. The same is true of Israel. They have their public diplomacy. They have their point of view. They have a logical and reasoned position of their own policies. And so it, in many respects, world public opinion, and maybe in New Zealand, is polarized between those who sympathize with Israel on balance, with many criticisms, of course, and those who sympathize with the Palestinians and overlook their shortcomings as well.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.